folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Hey, folks, welcome to Democratic Perspective. I think we have a really interesting show for the mic.
We got a great candidate, one of many wonderful Democratic candidates we have this season. Felicia French has been around here for a long time, and as you pointed out, she has a resume that our colleague Klaus von Studerheim is going to tell us all about. Tell us about Felicia.
So, Mike Costantino and Steve Williams, we're in the studio. I'm looking right at Mike right now. I can see he's physically there. Klaus and Felicia are both on the phone line. Klaus, did you want to introduce her?
Yeah, I do. When I looked at her career on her website, I was really taken aback. I mean, this is an extraordinary woman and will be a remarkable candidate. She's a single mom who worked her way through ROTC by holding three part-time jobs. I want to know what those were later on. Then she served in the U.S. military for 32 years as a nurse and medical evacuation helicopter pilot and retired as a colonel. The helicopter story is interesting because she wanted to fly and they wouldn't let her. They said she was too weak, even though she was a triathlete and a marathon runner, but she insisted, and she finally got to fly. And I was thinking, it's that kind of personality that we want for our legislatures, people who don't take no for an answer. Felicia holds 3 degrees, a BS in nursing, an MS in sustainable solutions, and an MS in systems management. She retired as a colonel in 2010, I think, if I remember correctly. And in 2015, she founded a small business offering sustainability consulting services to nonprofits. And she also volunteers for the local civil air patrol, tontorum search and rescue, and a community emergency response team, and the Sierra Club. I don't remember ever seeing such an impressive resume, and we're very excited about her as a candidate. Did I forget anything, Felicia?
No, thank you, Klaus. I appreciate that introduction.
I assume being a woman has something to do with them not trying to let you in flight school, right?
Yes, it was. First of all, I want to thank you, Steve, Mike, Klaus, Claudia, and Gary, for inviting me to speak on Democratic Perspective so that it gives me the opportunity to let the folks in LD6 learn a little bit about who I am and what I stand for. So thank you so much for that. I'll go ahead and let me answer your question about that. So, yeah, the flight school. I went in 87 when there weren't very, very many women going to flight school, especially in the Army. Army's kind of predominantly, a male-dominated. Only 17% of the people at the time were women in the military, period, and very much smaller than that in the aviation field. And I tried for 2 years. I've always wanted to fly helicopters, especially medevac, because it's in line with my medical background, nursing. And I tried for 2 years. I was a triathlete, like Klaus said, a marathoner, and they kept saying I wasn't healthy enough, I wasn't strong, and my arms were too short and whatnot. And finally, it really just boiled down to the fact that I was a woman, and I was told that later many times throughout the years in aviation that and why I didn't get assignments and all. And back then, they could just come out and tell you that. It wasn't considered, just accepted. So, yes. To answer your question, it was because I was a woman.
Well, that's interesting that they would just admit it. We're not going to let you fly a Black Hawk helicopter or whatever they are just because you're a woman. They just outright said it at some point. You must have frustrated them a bit.
Yeah, well, it was very frustrating because I didn't understand that. It didn't make sense to me when, my background is medical and I wanted to fly medevac, and it just makes total sense to do that. And I passed all the tests, and I was – physically mentally ready to do this, and I'm passionate about. And at the same time, was other people when I went to flight school, I found out they didn't even want to fly. They didn't even care. They just happened to get in the wrong physical line, and the flight physical is much more extensive than a regular annual physical. And so they got in, and I because they were in the wrong line, they said, oh, you might as well just go ahead and apply for flight school because you just passed the flight physical or something. And so it's kind of frustrating.
Hey, Felicia, well, let's get into it a little bit here. I you've been campaigning a long time. You're trying to get into the state Senate, this point in the campaign it's the stretch, I guess. It's the most difficult time. It's the people are saying the nastiest things. People's tempers are short. I think we're real sensitive to everything. But one of the things I like about your campaign, like many things about it, of course, But you went to government accountability, state government accountability, in a state where, in my opinion, corruption is rampant and open. When it comes to charter schools, it comes to so many things. I don't believe Arizona even hides there. Donald Trump visits the state one day, has a nice chat with the Governor Ducey, and the next day COVID-19 restrictions are lifted. This is crazy open corruption. One of the things you ask for is accountability. What do you mean by accountability?
Well, I mention that because accountability is one of my top personal values, and fiscal accountability even more so, because we always say we don't have enough money to fund the things that we should, like public education, yet we waste money right and left. And I'm talking Department of Defense at state levels, almost every level. And one of the examples I like to use that why accountability is so important to me is back in 2001, when the Afghan and Iraq war broke out, I was the deputy state surgeon for the National Guard, the medical commander here in Arizona. And I was personally responsible for the medical readiness of over 5,000 soldiers. And I had to ensure that our citizen soldiers, because most of them had just regular civilian jobs, mechanics, tellers, grocery baggers. And then the 1 week in a month and 2 weeks in the year, they were soldiers. And that's what the National Guard is, citizen soldiers. So while we were training, in order to train them to make sure they're proficient in their military occupational specialty at the same time and make sure that they're physically ready. So in order to ramp up to get for the war, we had to do all physicals on every single one of our soldiers and make sure they had the training and catch up on all the training they need to do to deploy in a war zone. So it was urgent. It was rapid, and we just didn't have the logistical capability to do that. So I started looking at what we needed to do, and one of the main reasons why we weren't medically ready was dental readiness. Our soldiers did not have dental health care coverage. So, and that was the number one cause for non-deployment, medical non-deployment in the entire country was dental ready. And so I thought, well, what do we do about this? We can't just all of a sudden get a bunch of dentists. We started sending them to their dentist, or came up with dentists. But they were no shows or couldn't make it because of their work conflicts or whatever. And it was very expensive because if it didn't show up, we still had to pay for it as taxpayers. So what I started looking into a mobile dental unit. And when I did that, that took care of another win-win-win situation. We were able to get the mobile units at the soldier's unit so they didn't have to travel. Of course, the units are all over the state. They did save time on traveling so they could train instead of spending the whole day driving down to Phoenix or convoying down to Phoenix, wasting all that time and gas and effort. We go to them, the dental units, and then we would have them examine there and much less expensive, much more efficient, and we knew right away. And a lot of people are afraid to go to the dentist, but that peer pressure when you're in line and all your buddies are going to the dentist and sitting in a chair, you're more apt to go too. They're not going to back down. So we had much higher compliance rate. And in the end, we ended up saving taxpayers a lot of money, a lot of time, and our soldiers were much more ready to deploy. And as a result, we were like the number one in the country with less than 1% non-deployment because of dental readiness.
Wow, that's huge. I'm sorry, go ahead. They couldn't get George Bush to show up to a National Guard meeting, but
That's a really good example of innovation and saving money in the military. And so I just got to think that the military letting you in and then promoting you as they did, giving you authority, was like very beneficial to American people. When you went to flight school, was flying helicopters everything you thought it was going to be? Did you love it as much as you thought you were going to do?
Yes. I have to say, there are times when I pass by or see a helicopter fly overhead and I get a longing in the pit of my stomach for it. There's nothing like it. It's better than flying fixed wings. I've flown fixed wings before, and there's something about helicopters, the versatility of them. And to this day, it's how practical they are, how, you know, for medevac and getting to remote places and landing almost anywhere, and for fire suppression and helping rescue people like they did in California. It's such a really, it's a great way of having a lot of fun and also doing a lot of good. So it's not often you can combine those two things. You know, you feel very purposeful and also can have a lot of fun at the same time.
Without a doubt. I spent my 5 years in the Arizona Army National Guard, and as far as a tool goes, then I stood under my share of helicopters loading slings full of all sorts of stuff, but ammunition, et cetera. It's an incredibly usable tool and a weapon system and all of these things that you could possibly want out of a something that you use to do your job. It's quite a thing, and those people that were able to use them with some skill and some style were certainly much appreciated.
I have a question. I guess it's a little bit out in left field, and your last command was in Afghanistan, and I know you had a medevac unit, but did you have any contact with actual Afghanistani women and others? Were you able to do anything for the Afghanistanis, or was it entirely focused on American military personnel, which would seem like that would have to be the case, but I just asking.
Yeah, actually, I had a lot of contact with the Afghan women and the children and the men. My unit was deployed. I was a senior medical advisor in that time. I wasn't a medevac pilot, and I advised the headquarters there in Kabul and our military units there, the brigade that I was with the Georgia National Guard. And we did a lot of humanitarian missions. We went out, sought them out, because I'm a firm believer in winning hearts and minds as opposed to blowing things up and knocking down doors. And it's been proven to be more effective. If you help people out when they're in the worst of times, they're more apt to not become terrorists against you or be persuaded to be terrorists against you. And it's just the right thing to do, of course. And so, it's one of those win-win situations. You're doing a good, humane thing, helping people out, and to help prevent the further anguish and tragedy. And at the same time, you're also protecting your soldiers more because you're less apt to be attacked. If you've just gone out and done humanitarian missions around your base, the attacks decrease because the enemy, the Taliban, they cannot persuade them to attack us when you just took care of their child that was severely burned or a broken bone, or you fed them, you gave them some clothes for the winter, you know, and you helped them through, you know, through so many different tragedies. So, yes, it was wonderful to work with the women and children, especially
well, that's huge,
because
Felicia,
they are so oppressed.
And you know it because America's hypocrisy is the best recruiter for terrorists and the Taliban and whatnot, and to have all that stuff that we had in Afghanistan and to not share with those that needed it most, the population that we were supposedly trying to protect, and you saw through all that and found a way to do probably what I would see as, quite frankly, the biggest impact on the local population, simply by doing the humanitarian things that should come natural but don't to too many military leaders. And so let's get back to Arizona here. Let's talk about the Arizona campaign trail. What are you finding out there? I know it's a time of COVID and a lot of this stuff is virtual, but I think. Some of it's been so successful, just like, I don't know, I guess it comes to us through our TV shows and whatnot. We see what people can do in a virtual environment, and it's pretty impressive. But we're just looking for your sense of campaigning for the Arizona State Senate in 2020. This is a weird time in so many ways, and so give us some feedback. What's going on?
Well, I'm finding that people, it doesn't matter what party they belong to, what walk of life, they care about the same things. They really do. They want really good public education for their kids. They want affordable, accessible, quality health care. And they want the government accountability to their tax dollars in it. And so this time around, compared to 2 years ago, I'm finding that health care is really much more on the forefront. Still funding public education is still a key issue, but with the COVID-19 pandemic, so many people lost their jobs through no fault of their own, and now tied with that job loss is their health care loss, their insurance. So now, they're here when they most need it during a pandemic, so now you don't have income and you don't have health care. And that's a tragedy at this day and age in the 21st century, United States of America. And I see more and more people they get that connection, having your health care tied to your employment is not a good idea, and that we need to do something about it. So, I find that people are much more receptive to hearing both parties, I think, especially a progressive perspective now, because we are more bipartisan. We're willing to work to solve the issues. We care, again, I'll just say, putting, you know, patriotism and public service over politics. It has nothing to do with your political party. If you really love this country, then you care about your community and you care about getting things done and working toward that end. So I'm seeing that more and more, and I talk about that a lot. People ask me that when I'm, you know, how am I going to work with the other side? And I remind them that the whole 32 years I was in the military, I encountered thousands of people, thousands of soldiers, sailors, Marines, airmen, as well air women, as well as civilian contractors. And not once did we ever ask what party they belonged to. We just cared about taking care of each other and getting the mission accomplished.
There you go. That's a great thing to run on.
Let me ask a question. Felicia, 4 years ago when this same race was run, what was the percentage of Democrat and Republican? Do you know?
Well, 2 years ago was when I ran for a state house, and it was definitely a majority Republican and independent and Democrat down there. I think it was 29%, 29% Democrat in the 30, upper 30s for both Republican and independent. I can't remember the exact number.
You struck me when you ran 2 years ago as a really, just to go back to Mike's question, as a really people person who really liked not pressing the flesh, essentially getting out and talking to people and giving speeches to small groups. And it must feel weird not to be able to do that, even though you're doing your best to connect in this COVID environment.
Well, as a nurse, you know, it is, I'm a people person. I think you have to be a nurse. I don't know how effective you can be if you don't care about people. And yes, it is more difficult, but also at the same time, it's what I do as a nurse. My first priority is to protect the community. And by not going out and exposing them to potential carrying a virus, is more important to me than interacting with them. Because at the end, I know this is going to go away eventually. We're going to get through this and we're going to be better off because of it. But I'd rather as many people get through it alive and healthy. And in order to do that, we all have to make a few sacrifices, whether it be wearing masks in public, keeping your distance, washing hands, all that, and also avoiding people who are more vulnerable to COVID-19 than not. So to me, it's really important that we put people, their health and well-being before a campaign and possibly getting votes, for that matter.
I'm going to ask you another question about COVID, even though I know you're not an expert. Fauci said yesterday on TV that we're plateauing at about 40,000 cases a day. That's across the U.S., not Arizona. 40,000 cases a day, about 1,000 deaths a day. That seems to be the plateau the USA has hit. Do you have a feeling for when this could get better, when this becomes less of a huge thing in American life, Arizona life?
Well, yes, it's really, really unfortunate. It very much saddens me that so many people have died from COVID-19 and are suffering and lost loved ones. And there's some, you know, there's a lot of complications from it as well, the long term, even though many people have survived from it. They're having some a lot of medical issues and possibly long-term ones because of it. So it's I don't know when it's going to end, but I do know the only way we're going to end this is if we all cooperate and make a little bit of inconvenient sacrifices. I don't even call them sacrifices. Wearing a mask when our healthcare providers are wearing masks 12 hours a day and longer, day in and day out. They're in that PPE. And I know how uncomfortable it is. I wore it for not even nearly that long when I worked on the Navajo Nation for a month. So I know how uncomfortable it is. But you know what? If it protects people's lives, that's the right thing to do. And if we all just wore our masks, we're out in public, minimize our time out in public, it's a little inconvenient. But if you, it means less suffering and anguish. Then I don't understand why we as human beings don't get that and do that. And it does help if you have government leadership emphasizing that from all the top down and remind people, because people do look to their leadership for guidance and example. And if you don't, if we don't have that kind of leadership saying, hey, even if you doubt the existence of it, let's do the precautionary principle. Wear a mask in public. Wear, you know, tell people to wear a mask, wash hands. The science is behind it, if nothing else. But I think, again, the first priority is protecting, you know, government is to protect their people. And if you're not doing that, then you know, it's, there's something wrong there.
Yeah, that's part of the accountability thing. In a minute, I'm going to ask you a water question. I heard you speaking the other day at a candidate forum, and you talked a little bit about water. And in Arizona, there's a lot of water news today. The Western states, six Western states, got together, sent a letter to Donald Trump, and said. But please let us work out our own water issues. It's really critical right now. But I want to, before I do that, while you're thinking, I want to get this in here once or twice. We want to talk about the dates that are coming up for when you get to vote for Felicia French, who we're talking to, candidate for Arizona State Senate. October 5th is your last day to register to vote. October 5th is your, that's a Monday, it's your last day to register to vote. October 7th is when ballots go out, county recorders start sending ballots out. a lot of campaigns, this has been a shift, I think, for certainly people in the campaigns in the last four or five cycles, but the general population, I think, is a little slower. In other words, voting starts October 7th. You can mail in your ballot. You can go get in line at a lot of county, and you can vote in any of the polling places in Arizona.
I think it's important to remind folks to vote early this election because of Donald Trump and the total corruption that they're trying to do to our postal system that has been as American as apple pie for the last couple of hundred years. They seem to want to undo it. So I would say probably there's no problem, but just to be safe, to go ahead and vote early. We also want to remind people a couple other things. Vote down ticket. Don't just vote for Joe Biden and then leave it at that. Go down ticket and look at the Democratic candidates like Felicia, because we have the best set, I think, Mike, of Democratic candidates we've had in a long time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Coral Evans is the one we want to mention that's running for Arizona State House, is what Felicia ran for last time. Yes, all the way down the ballot, please.
My other thing that I wanted to add in is this is the time, because of a lot of the campaigning is done with media, this is the time to contribute to the campaign. Don't wait till the last minute to send a check or contribute to campaigns like Felicia. go ahead and do it now. Do it in this next week when the money is most useful, Mike.
I was going down the list of dates. So October 5th is the last day to register. October 7th, ballots start dropping, as they say in the trade here. October 23rd is the deadline for accepting early ballot requests at the county. So that October 23rd, they're not going to accept after October 23rd. They won't accept your request for early ballot. October 30th is the deadline to vote early in person. October 30th is a Friday, which is kind of convenient. It's the last day of the week. That's the deadline to go down and vote early in person. And then November 3rd, of course, it's a Tuesday, and that's the general election. Now, if you the other thing people are encouraged, if you're a politically active or at least an active voter, but check your registration. Give the county recorder, give the elections department a call. And now, if you voted in the primary, we're pretty sure your registration is fine. But it doesn't hurt to check your registration. Some people have been finding some hinky
things. You can do it online now, right?
And you can do it online. There you go.
It's quick and easy. You have to show some ID, I think. But you can do it online. Felicia's running for LD6. We have great candidates for the other LDs, too. We'll try to get some interviews with at least some of them before the election. We'll see how that works out.
That's true. All of you, pay attention to Democratic Perspective for the next few weeks. We're going to have lots of candidates on. Okay, Felicia French, candidate for Arizona State Senate. Let's talk. Water is. let's talk about water. What we live in an arid state. We live on what's under Arizona, and that's we live out of many aquifers and reservoirs. At least in northern Arizona, there's more aquifer than reservoir. The water situation in Arizona is complicated and difficult. But I'm going to let Felicia French talk about water. What can you say about water that will make us all feel better or scare the crap out of us?
Well, water is as a sustainability scientist. I, from a scientific point, I know how important it is, you know, our drinking water and how we're contaminating it with the uranium mining, coal mining, all that, just mining in general. The tailings from it leaches into our watershed and poisons our water. Then you add on top of that, we have over 20-year drought. So we definitely need to be, and water is life. We cannot live without it. So it's, and not to mention, and then if you want to look at it from a kind of a business perspective, up here where I live, it's recreation. We have all these lakes up here that people like to recreate on, fishing, swimming, you know, boating, just camping around. And so it's really important in every aspect of our life. And so we definitely need to protect it. And again, fracking is also a problem with our water. We're up here in the northeast part. There's helium fracking for helium, and again, they're trying to say it's safe, but it's not. It's been proven it's not. They put chemicals in there to get to extract any mineral gas out there, and then that leaches into our water. You can't take it all back. And over 40 million people count on this water up here in the northern part, all the way to, you know, California, Colorado River. So many people rely on, so many states rely on the Colorado River. And so, we have to be careful with the uranium mining, all that. It's the money that they make from those minerals does not come near what it costs to clean up. And then, of course, the externalities of cost of health care and people getting cancer, diabetes, or, you know, any illness that they can get, and the illnesses people already have are exacerbated by the, having contaminated water. So it makes you more vulnerable, just like COVID-19 makes us more vulnerable if you already have asthma or emphysema and stuff. So it's really important we focus on protecting our water for primary purpose, drinking first and foremost, obviously, and then the other things for recreating. And one of the things we can do to protect it is go with renewable energy. There is such a connection between fossil fuel power, such as coal plants, nuclear as well. Nuclear isn't fossil per se, but it's water intensive to cool off the reactors there. And also dams are 100% hydroelectric. They're water and required. So if you have a drought, the water table goes below the intake valve to generate. You're not going to have electricity, let alone water. And coal plants take a lot of water. They sucked up the aquifer up on the Navajo Nation to slurry the coal to the Navajo Generating Station and the other power plants. What a waste of water. And so if we had renewable energy, such as solar and wind, it's not water intensive. It doesn't require much water other than make the panels originally, but still nothing compared to what the ongoing need for water for coal, nuclear, and hydroelectric.
Well,
so
very often,
you know, win-win situation, getting clean energy, clean water, and having more water available, and providing far more jobs, clean jobs.
In water situations.
Let me ask you a question about the campaign. How do you campaign now, actually, in real life, that, you know, we have all of these COVID restrictions and so forth? What do you do to get the word out?
Things like this, the radio, thank you so much for this opportunity to get the word out by radio. I really appreciate it because I know a lot of people listen to the radio, as do I. Also, Zoom meetings. We used to have small get-togethers. Now we're having a lot more Zoom calls and events and phone calls. We have myself, Coral, and I are making a lot of calls, and so are our volunteers. And I can't even emphasize enough how much the volunteers are doing for us because I call them force multipliers because there's no way Coral and I can get out there and make all the calls ourselves to all the voters. So having people call for us is a huge force multiplier. And mailers, we're doing digital now, but all that costs money, of course. So Coral and I have had to up our budgets because of this because we can't go out and gather in person and hit that. So we're doing it this way.
And Coral Evans is running for the state house, right?
Coral's running for state house, yes.
Yeah, and so you're running for the state senate.
And I'm really excited about her. Coral and I've known her for 3 years now, and she's just wonderful. We are so in line with our values, and I just have the utmost respect for her, and I'm really excited about running with her and working together in the state legislature. She's done an awesome job as the mayor of Flagstaff. She was the first mayor in Arizona to mandate wearing masks in public, and I have great admiration for her display and her leadership.
What could you do if you're elected to improve health services in Arizona, as an Arizona a member of the Arizona Senate, is there something significant that Arizona could do to improve health care here? We know the situation nationally, and hopefully Joe Biden will get in, and we'll get a big improvement over Obamacare and get some of the problems worked out. But what can you do at the state level to help with people's health care?
Well, the first thing, going back to the COVID-19, one of the first things, because this isn't going to resolve yet, and even if it is by the time we get in, I want to make sure we have in advance that we have comprehensive testing and timely contact tracing. Because it doesn't do any good to have the comprehensive testing if you don't have contact tracing immediately within 24 hours or no later than 3 days, because that gives too much time for it to spread. And that's one way that we can, as government, we can show leadership. Prevention is worth, you know, the old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Well, I think in this case, an ounce of prevention is worth a ton of cure. Contact tracing requires hiring people. Since we have such a high unemployment rate, this would be a good way to solve both problems, hiring people right now and also getting that contact tracing. You train them, and then you get them out there, and they can start calling, making the call. So they would be timely contact tracing if you have more people actually doing it. I mean, we've had over 5,300 deaths in Arizona alone, and these were preventable. And if we had mimicked leadership that the Jonathan Nez on the Navajo Nation did, I saw it firsthand the month I was there. He immediately mandated mask wearing, those kind of things, and closed down, had curfews, and, you know, made sure that people understood that. You know, almost to a person, I didn't hear anybody complain about wearing masks because they knew it was the right thing to do to care for their people. And so I have great admiration. And their president, John Legend, told them, hey, he wore a mask. He went out there and he actually helped people. He did, you know, great things and displays of leadership. Number one was obviously showing concern for his people by telling them, hey, we need to wear masks. We're going to get through this together. So that's one of the ways. The other way is we've learned that we have horrible broadband, if at all, in the rural area. 22% of Arizona does not have access to broadband. So that was problematic 2 years ago when I was running, and now even more so with COVID-19. Now our kids that didn't have, at least they had it in school perhaps, but they could do their schoolwork. Well, now they can't even do their homework, let alone their schoolwork, and now they can't. Telemedicine would be a huge help to people. A lot of our elderly population wouldn't have to drive all the way in or expose themselves or be exposed to a virus. So if they had telemedicine, much of what their routine exams could be done that way. And then our businesses. How do our small businesses operate when they don't have internet or people working from home? How do they work from home if they don't have internet? So expanding access to broadband throughout the state would be a win-win-win situation once again. And so those are some of the ways we can help. Also incentivizing nurses. We have a nursing shortage just like a teacher shortage. Incentivizing them to pay for their education like we're doing with the Arizona teachers plan here in Arizona to teach them, and then we pay for your education and you come and serve in the rural communities. And expanding access to health care by allowing people to buy into Medicare. And so there's so many things we can be doing and that wouldn't take that much effort.
That's great, Felicia. It's wonderful that we're talking to Felicia French, candidate for Arizona State Senate, and somebody that sees a connection between internet, the lack of availability of internet connections in many places in Arizona, especially in northern Arizona, and healthcare. That there's a connection between having a decent access.
That's so rarely pointed out, Mike.
Exactly. And believe me, I can't even begin to mention, I can't even, what I would do without an internet connection regarding my own health care. We want to, this is more of a campaign question. Kyrsten Sinema is sending out emails reminiscing about her days in the Arizona State Legislature. And talking about campaigning, I guess when I'm going to use the word Kyrsten Sinema, Arizona senator in Washington, is acting like she's giving the Arizona legislative candidate such as yourself a boost. Have you had any contact, or is this just a general thing?
No, I have not had any contact with her this year, and I'm assuming it's a general thing, and that's very nice to hear that she's doing that. That's great.
Yeah, okay, good. I was just wondering if this was a trend that we were going to see more of, and or if this was just but it's a good thing. You know, she's capitalizing on I think, her popularity and sharing some. Of course, the Senate, one of the things she talks about is, 8 years ago when she was in the Arizona legislature, there was dominated by Republicans, massively. And thanks to you and a few others, we're close to, this is the year. And
let me ask, how many seats have to flip? Do you know, Felicia, for we have a Democratic state senate?
It's three in the state senate.
Three in the state senate.
The fourth would throw us over.
Well, it would be great to stop the madness, Mike. The crazy, crazy, crazy stuff that's introduced into the Arizona Senate and House is just amazing.
Lori Roberts, columnist for the Arizona Republic, like, we can de-kook the Arizona legislature by electing Democrats. We can uncook, I guess. She says de-kook, but it looks better in writing.
I like de-kook.
Yeah, we can de-kookify the Arizona legislature.
De-kookify it.
By electing Arizona Democrats.
I want to ask you,
let me clarify that real quick. It's three for the Senate to have, we're a majority, and two in the House to have a majority.
Okay. And I wanted to ask you, is there a question about your issues that we're not asking you that you'd like to address, like you address accountability and the things on the importance of the internet for healthcare? Is there something else we should ask you that you'd like to talk about?
Well, there's so many things I'd like to discuss and work towards. But education is obviously a big one, and hopefully we can discuss that another time, because it is a long conversation, funding public education. As you know, Arizona is 49th in the state, in the country, for teacher pay, administrative staff pay. It's way down there in the low, or rather the high 40s, in retention rates, graduation rates, class sizes, I believe we're 50th for class sizes. I mean, that's appalling. And, you know, even 10 years ago, 20 years, we weren't that off. And because we don't have an earmarked funding stream for public education, and we rely heavily on property taxes. And we all know certain areas have lower property taxes. And usually the people who most need a really good public school, they don't have it because they live in a lower socioeconomic neighborhood with low property taxes. And people in wealthier neighborhoods have higher property taxes. They can pay for a much better school and pay their teachers more and all that. And that just perpetuates the cycle of poverty. And so we need to stop that. It benefits everyone when we, not only it's the right thing to do because all our kids deserve a great public education, regardless of their zip code. And then also we need to make sure for our economy. Corporations don't come to Arizona not because we don't give them tax breaks. It's because our education system is a joke. And they see that. When I was putting in for assignments when I was on active duty with my daughter, I would look at which states, you know, my first priority was actually which had the best public schools. And I didn't want to put in for a fort or base that didn't have a good the state did not have good public education. So the companies are doing the same thing. Their employees don't want to move their families to a state to work where the schools are down in the bottom. So it's not good for our economy either. So if you want to look at it strictly from that standpoint, not to mention you have a good education system, you have future good employees and taxpayers. So it's really important that we do all day kindergarten. We do also trade schools, because our trade schools, what happened to them? And that's not a college isn't for everyone. So it's really important that we give our children choices so that they have, you know, we have set them up for success. And not everyone wants to go to university, nor should they. So if we had trade schools, because then we'd have more reliable. I don't know about the area you're in, but here, getting good plumbers, electricians, carpenters, mechanics, you don't always know what you get. Some of them are just learned from their grandparents or something. And that's great, but there's a lot more to it than that, especially with modern technology. So it's really important. Education is my number one issue.
So Felicia French is recommending, are you a supporter of Proposition 208?
Yes, I am. Invest in ed, because that gives us a steady stream of money that we can count on. And it only affects 1% as far as taxing, 3.5% tax on top of the taxes already of $250,000 or more. The person makes $250,000 or more, single income, $500 for dual income, it's 3.5% tax. That only affects 1% of our population, and not the small businesses. Because most small businesses don't make $250,000 a year. That's even doctors and lawyers don't. So it's really, and that would give us a steady stream of income across the board.
You don't think 3.1% or whatever would break them, and they would go into poverty over paying that amount of taxes for public schools?
No. And honestly, I've had a number of people I've spoken to that will be affected by this, so to speak, the surcharge of 3.5% tax, and they're fine with it. They know it's going to public education, and they see that value. So, and right now we have, you know, corporations that aren't getting over 300 corporations aren't getting taxed in Arizona. That's another source of money. The priority needs to be funding public education. We are way, way down, and it's affecting us. And also, if you think about it, people end up, you know, homeless, in prison, jobless, and we're putting more money in our prison systems than we are in our public education systems. So it's much, again, the ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure, an ounce of prevention worth a ton of cure here if we put our money in. It's just the right thing to do.
Felicia, I'm sorry, we're running out of time. We got about 30 seconds left. So thank you. Thank you. If you like what you heard, please find Felicia French on the web and go give her some money. Felicia French is on the web. She has a wonderful website. You could contact the station. We'll find a way to get your donation to Felicia French for the Arizona State Senate. We want to remind you that Democratic Perspective is on every Monday at 8:15 a.m. You can find this and all our podcasts at vvid.org. Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org has this show and all our shows. See you next week, folks. Thanks a lot.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.